cast of verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Dave Bowman?
Approach and identify.
Hello?
There's not enough liquor and therapy in the world to undo that.
From the packed Northwest studio of the Podcast 99 Network, located in beautiful downtown Silverdale, Washington, this is Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show podcast. Now, here is your host, the submarine qualified, well-coffeed, rules-driven, elitist history buff, Dave Bowman.
Weapons con, you have permission to fire.
Have permission to fire, con, weapons on.
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today, most of them far beyond our control, you might say, so perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity, public sector labor unions, where congressional people sleep, Facebook data, fake news, and humanity. Don't touch that dial, just try to hear me out for a while. Well, more from the Supreme Court this morning, this time the much-anticipated Janus ruling. How you feel about it says more about your politics than the actual issue at hand. Congressional people want you to tell them that they cannot sleep on their couches. Well, technically our couches. I'm 100% serious about that. Facebook can't tell you where the data it collected about you went, and California has a solution to fake news. Who's surprised? Here's how you get a hold of me. Text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. Email is Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on the web. Just look for us on Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes, The Dave Bowman Show. E lo qui conizio, the greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. Tis the illusion of knowledge. All right, so I'm just going to say it up front because you're going to tell here pretty soon. This is the most discombobulated I've been coming on the air in ages. Like 15 seconds before I hit start, Ben's in here going, my computer's not working. And of course, he has to have that. So I had to go fiddle with that. It's been a crazy morning. Everybody's here. So the grandkids are here. The daughters are here. And I'm not 100% feeling my best. I don't want to get too detailed, but a little bit of lower gastric distress, I guess, is the best way to describe it. I think we're past the worst of it, but I'm not really sick, but I'm not feeling at my best either. So if I seem a little flighty today, it's probably why. Although I will not attribute Justice Kennedy's ruling opinion into the wrong case today. I promise you I won't do that. It was a interesting day yesterday, wasn't it? And, of course, it's gone downhill from there. Everybody's got an argument. Everybody's got something to say about that yesterday. And at the end of the day, it just I don't know what changed. I really don't. Much like we have today, as the Supreme Court issues its much-anticipated Janus ruling. This is a ruling that has been chatted about, discussed about, and complained about for months. People have been waiting for this. And in essence, what you need to know in a nutshell is that the court says that it violates the First Amendment to force people to pay money to somebody that expresses views that don't match their own. It's a little more complex than that, but if you boil it down to its essence, it's there. But it really deals with a bigger issue in the country, and that is this idea of public sector labor unions. Now, look, labor unions are, I don't know how to, they're controversial. There's no two ways about that. They always have been. I mean, if you go back to the beginning of the labor movement, the very necessity, the reasons for its existence, the necessity for its existence in the first place is because human beings are assholes. I mean, that's just, it's just as simple as that. Management wants to get as much work possible out of someone with as little compensation as they can get away with. And by the way, this still happens. Okay, I worked for a company, which shall remain nameless, but it rhymes with Clear Channel, that at the time where I worked was not unionized. And believe me, as I've mentioned on numerous occasions, they weren't exactly the most generous company with their employees. some employees they were, but most employees they were not. I guess if you're the CEO or the COO or whatever, and you're, you know, going into Chapter 11, then you get a $2, $3, $4, $5 million bonus, but everybody else gets screwed over. Anyway, that's my bitterness showing through. The push was to do more for less, do more for less, do more for less, because somehow or another we were lucky to have these jobs in radio, and so we should be grateful that we weren't just being fired. We should be excited about, you know, we're going to pay you less and expect you to do more. That's not the typical relationship that Americans really want with their employers, is it? And yet, it's true across the board. When I was in management, we often found ourselves with budget cuts and the likes of that. And of course, I was in nonprofit management, so it's slightly, little bit different. But, you know, there were times when we had to ask people to do more with less, or for less, or you're not going to get a raise this year. And of course, this was a pretty common thing during the late 2000s, and not getting a raise in early into the 2010s. Just as need money for it. We can't afford it. Advertising rates are falling. And then you would watch as public sector unions would continue to push for increases and continue to, in many cases, receive them because of the organizational power of their public sector union. Now, we're talking about two different things here. If we were talking about the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, if we were talking about the Teamsters, if we were talking about, I don't know, pick one, car builders. Hell, I belonged to a union when I was with UPS for a little bit. It was a closed shop. You had to join the union. I thought, well, this is going to be an interesting experience for me, but they, at any rate, it never really mattered all that much. But if we're talking about private unions, private sector unions, I'm going to tell you that I'm not all that excited about them. I'm not yay union, but then again, neither am I. It's a private business. It's a private enterprise. Anybody remember Eastern Airlines? Eastern Airlines used to be an airline that ran domestically here in the United States. And it late in its life, it was run by Frank Borman, who was one of the astronauts on Apollo 8, and some other flights as well. But my brain's a little scrambled right now. Anyway, the unions pushed him, the private unions pushed him, and he basically said, screw it, we're not paying you that. And the thing went out of business. Oddly enough, I'm okay with that. But when we're dealing with private or public sector unions, it's a little bit different of an animal here. And I'm going to tell you up front, my position on this is personal and it's passionate. I do not believe that public sector employees, that people who are paid by tax dollars, should be allowed to unionize. Now, maybe you disagree with that. Maybe you have, you know, passions about it as well. But personally, I do not believe so. There are some reasons why I don't believe so. Number one, government employees are significantly better paid than private employees. And I'm tired of hearing that they're not. Secondly, it's virtually impossible to get rid of a public employee. The job security levels are incredible. And lastly, there's this element of service. When you go to work for the government, you're providing a service. In fact, virtually every one of their departments has service to the public implied somewhere in their motto. We're here to serve the customer. We're here to serve the public. Until it comes time to take more of the tax dollars to our pockets. Then it's a little bit different. There's pros and cons to everything. And I'm not going to get drawn into that debate. If you want to join a private union, have at it. I'm not going to tell you not to. I'm not going to tell you to do it. I don't like the idea of the closed shop. I think the idea of the closed shop is, well, frankly, it's flat out communistic. But, you know, I don't have to work there. Nothing says I have to work here, so I can go somewhere else if I so choose. When you're dealing with government employees, however, it's a little bit different story. Do you know how many people work in government around the country? off the top of your head, can you guess how many it is? Roughly, according to the internet, roughly 125,970,000 people work for governments at all levels throughout the country of the United States. I'm sorry, that's how many people working. 7.8 million of those are public employees. So you got 125 million workers, 126 million workers, we'll just round it up. And of those, 7.8 million are government workers, whether you're talking about city, county, state, federal levels. So of those 7.8 million, you're dealing with a roughly, you know what? I meant to run the numbers there. Here, let's do this real quick. Equals that divided by scintillating radio here, divided by that. So basically, you're talking about 6.2% roughly of the entire workforce works for government, which should cause us some concern. I mean, that's a big workforce at government. That's government doing a lot of things with employees. And why? And if we were to sit here and go through every government and every place and every level and say, why is this person necessary? Is this thing necessary? Is that thing necessary? Well, maybe we'd come up with some people that just really aren't necessary, and maybe we wouldn't. Maybe we'd find, you know, the big danger in dealing with government staffing is you might find you need more people. You're certainly going to have to hire somebody to do the study, right? So there you go. It's a catch-22. Whether or not they're necessarily be is one thing, but allowing public sector employee or private, yeah, public sector employees to unionize in many ways takes out that, in my view, it takes out that service element of things. Now, I'll give you an example. When we're talking about these unions, what are we talking about? We're talking about SEIU, for one thing, Service Employees International, which does cover private areas too, but many of your government staffing, this is where they're going to go, especially if you're in California. But we're also talking about police unions, fire unions, that sort of thing. I have watched through the years, I have watched as a police union advocated, told the city council, who told them, hey, we don't have any money. I have watched a police officers association basically tell the city council, you're going to give the senior officers raises and you're going to cut jobs. You're going to fire the junior officers, the most junior officers, because you can't afford them, and you're going to give the rest of us raises. And the city council went and did exactly as they were told. And then the same police union turned around 6 to 8 months later and advocated for a tax increase because, quote, there aren't enough officers on patrol. Now, again, none of these officers were making minimum wage by any stretch of the imagination. Most of them were far, far above the median wage for that particular area. But, you know, if you compare them to other police departments around the country, well, then we're, well, but you're not, oh, nothing stopping you from going working there, was my argument. The ludicrousness of that whole situation. And from a personal aspect of it, this is where I get kind of personal. I'm sorry if it offends you, but this is how I feel, and this is my show, and if you don't like it, well, turn the dial. My problem with this is every damn police car in this freaking country says on its side somewhere to protect and serve. Every single one of them will tell you that the reason they got into police work was because they wanted to serve the public. Look at me. I want to serve the public. But when it comes time to actually serve, what they really want is more money. They want increased benefits. They want retirement, all those kinds of stuff. And I've said this from day one. If it's really about service, if it's really, truly, honestly about serving, index benefits and retirements to what the military gets. That's what you should get. Now, I'll be the first to tell you that I think the military gets pretty reasonable retirement benefits and pretty reasonable benefits while they're in. I have no issue with that at all. They're nowhere near what most police unions get, nowhere near what most firefighter unions get, but they're pretty decent. And if it's really about service, if it's really about my community and serving my people, index it to that and make sure it's the same as that. Oh, but Dave, then people won't want to be cops. Horse manure. Yes, they will. Yes, they will. At any rate, the Janus decision. So that's my position on unions. And maybe you agree with it, maybe you don't. Maybe you want to send me a nasty email telling me I'm a freaking idiot. Well, Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. You won't be the first. You certainly won't be the last. I'll read it. And I'll go, okay. There you go. The Janus decision coming from the Supreme Court this morning, and I'm not going to sit here and needle it down to its nth degree. The Janus decision essentially comes down to, can you force somebody to give you money to do something that they don't agree with? It's focused on public service unions. It's focused on that. But the implications spread far beyond that, don't they? It's not just public service unions howling this morning. It's not just public service unions this morning going, oh my God, it's the end of the world. It's the worst case possible scenario. How are we going to fund our political activities now? Other unions are looking at this going, oh, well, if we can't force Dave as a UPS employee to pay us money to do this, then, you know, if they can't do it, how can we do it? Well, what are we going to do then? So I think there are implications far beyond this. Clearly, there's going to be. I mean, clearly, this is going to open up the door. But again, it's a 5-4 decision. So already the drums are pounding. Already the realization is coming. And I don't think this is a bad realization, folks. I really don't. Already the cry and hue has become, we must get a new president. We must take the Senate if you're on the progressive side of things, because you believe now that the Supreme Court has gone wacko conservative and QED, they're going to, I don't know, next thing you know, they're going to outlaw skirts or something. I don't know. They're not going to. But since we believe the worst case scenario is going to happen, since we believe it's absolute, tragically, the worst thing that could possibly happen is what's going to happen, we must scream and yell about that. And already this has begun calls for political action, grassroots activism. And I'm okay with that. I don't have a problem with that. If the vast majority of the people in this country actually believe in a progressive agenda and are willing to go out and vote for it, well, it's the way our system works. I don't personally believe that the vast majority of people believe that, but be that as it may, if that's the case, or if they can, you know, get their people going, then so be it. But I want to go back to this numbers thing again, just a little bit. So I was reading this morning, NBC, I guess, MSNBC. A recent nonpartisan study predicted that a Supreme Court defeat would eventually cause public employee unions to lose 726,000 members. A significant blow. Nearly half of all union members in the United States are government employees. Just let that sink in for just a minute. Nearly half of all union members in the entire United States are government employees. And if you figure virtually almost all of the government employees who are non-management are in the union anyway, and even some that are in the union, what's that tell you? So we'll just take this number, 7.8 million people working in government around the country, figure, all right, let's knock off a bit because some of them aren't going to be. Let's just call it 6.5 million. They're going to lose about 10. They're going to lose about 10% of their membership. And this is going to kill them. Your business loses 10% of its income. What do? If your business, if your portfolio, if your whatever you're doing loses 10% of its income, what do? What actions do you take? Do you cut 10% of your services? Do you go out and try to find new revenues? Do you adapt, improvise, and overcome? Or do you scream and whine that it's not fair that you've lost 10% of your income across the board? This is what I was talking about the other day with the Sarah Sanders thing at the Red Hen. if I were Sarah Sanders, I'd be opening a Chick-fil-A franchise across the street. That's what I'd do. If these unions weren't, if they were really about service, if they were, believe me, having been in the nonprofit world for much of my life, when we would lose 10% of our budget, as would happen on a fairly regular basis, by the way, we would figure out ways to get around it. These people seem paralyzed. These people seem like they're just like, oh my God, 10%, we're dead. What are we going to do? How do we function without 10% of what we're doing? Well, I would submit to you that if you can't function on that basis, then what you were doing wasn't all that important anyway. Certainly wasn't service, I'll tell you that. Anyway, court held that it's a violation of the First Amendment, forcing free and independent individuals to endorse ideas they find objectionable raises serious First Amendment concerns. That includes compelling a person to subsidize the speech of other private speakers, which, of course, after yesterday, you kind of knew this is where this was going, didn't you? And you knew it was going to be 5-4. Compelling speech. The court right now, 5-4, is not in favor of compelling speech. And if we're going to take the argument that money is speech, remember Citizens United, well, then we have to say, well, there you go. Agencies, the history of this whole thing is pretty typical, I guess, of this. At the end of the day, is it going to be the end of the public service union? No. At the end of the day, is this going to be a permanent thing? I don't think so. I can almost guarantee you that when Congress changes hands and when the presidency changes hands to the other party, and it will, write it down, people, it will not always be Republican controlled. Steps will be taken to make sure that this goes back the way it was and that it stays that way this time. Just like the law in California, they'll take steps to make sure that it goes back to the way it was, and steps will be taken to make sure it stays that way. And then rules will be changed, and then eventually it'll change back the other way, and the Republicans will be back in charge again, and they'll change it the way they want it, and then the other side will change it the way they want it. And back and forth we will go. It's not like we've heard the end of this. We really haven't. And we will continue to hear from police and fire unions all over the country about how they're not paid enough and how they must have more and they must have more, and how dare the people of this city not vote for a tax increase because they must want their houses to burn down and they must love crime. What happened to the serve part? What happened to the service part of things? Yep. I don't know. And again, I'm a military guy, so I see things from that viewpoint, and I accept the fact that I see things from that viewpoint, and that's not the entirety of the world. But if it's really about service, if it's really, really honestly about service, then you would have no problem linking pay, benefits, everything else to the military. But the truth is, it's not really about service, is it? It never has been, and it never will be. And that's the whole issue. I don't, you know, again, what the fallout from this is going to be, I don't know that they're going to lose 726,000 union members. Maybe they will. Maybe they'll lose more. Who knows? Maybe the country will come to the realization that having public sector unions is a bad idea. But since the presumption is, and since the perception is, that these unions only support Democrat candidates and political activities, shouldn't public service units be foreboding from doing that anyway? How do you have government employees advocating for government policies and government expenditures? That seems a little, what's the word? Biased? Seems like there's a clear conflict of interest there to me, but what do I know? I'm just a chat show host sitting in his office a long way from everybody else and drinking coffee and not really paying attention to what's going on other than the fact that Billy Hamilton is actually playing well today, and I benched him on my fantasy team because he sucked the last few months. And, of course, today he's going off, and I needed his points. It's completely unrelated to anything. Let's see. Chat room says, let's see where the chat room says. Been kicking that discussion around for many years when it comes to service with the local fire department and their negotiating tactics. Yeah, I agree. If it's really about service, then let's talk about how we honor service and how we reward service. If it's not, then let's at least drop the pretense that it's about, I want to serve my community. No, you want a paycheck for doing a dangerous job. If I had wanted to change companies, I'd had to sign a waiver with the union saying it was okay to spend my money. Yeah. Well, like I said, when I went to work for UPS, it was a closed shop, and that's actually one of the last things they told us. As we're going through the whole introduction, the guy was really embarrassed about it. He was like, so the last thing I have to tell you is you are required to join a union. So here's the form for you to join your union. And oh, by the way, it's going to cost you X dollars to join. So your first paycheck is going to be like, anyway, because you're going to have to pay all these union fees and union dues. So if you were counting on that to pay your rent, don't. And I'm sorry, but, you know, it's the negotiations and I don't really have any say in that and blah, blah, blah. And then they sent the union guy in to talk to us, and he was all excited. Oh, this is good. You're going to love this. This is going to be great. You're going to make so much money, and we're going to help you, and we're going to do this for you. And I guess maybe if I'd have stuck it out, maybe it would have been. But I didn't, so there you go. It only lasted a week. I loved working for UPS. Don't get me wrong. I loved the job that I was doing. I was a package handler, and As I blogged about once upon a time, it was like being on stores load again. I mean, it really was. It was easy. It was mind-numbingly easy work. You take a package, you look at the number on it, and you put it in the right bed. I mean, that's literally what I did for 8 hours a day. But the problem was they wanted me to work 15 hours a day, and I just couldn't do that. But I loved doing it. I mean, it was fun. It was, as I said to one of my managers who was about 12, one day, he said, you really seem to enjoy this. This is great, man. I don't have to think about anything for once in my life. I can just sit here and let my mind wander wherever it goes. And he looked at me like I was crazy. Well, this is hard work. No, dude, I've been to sea on a submarine. This is not hard work. This is fun. And I wish I'd have kept doing it, but I just couldn't work the 15 hours a day that they wanted. I had to get home. I had a son. My wife worked nights. If it hadn't been for that, I'd still be there. It was great. Anyway, it's half past the hour. 565-DAVE, 209-565-3283 is the text machine. You want to join me? We'll take a little break. We'll be back right after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're here at the Uptown Karate Club, where we're about to witness an incredible display of... Well, it's hard not to call it anything but a display of stupidity.
Hey, buddy! Do you really want to whack that pile of 2x4s with the part of your body that you think with? You know, there are easier ways to prove you're a... Whoa! That's gotta hurt!
Like I was saying, there are easier ways to prove you're a man. For instance, registering with Selective Service when you turn 18 shows that you're a man who's responsible and in charge of his life. Plus, it guarantees that you'll have the chance to receive college loans, job training, and government jobs. And best of all, it doesn't hurt a bit. Register with Selective Service within 30 days of your 18th birthday online at www.sss.gov or at your local post office. That's a nasty bruise.
Oh, it does hurt.
Is that a splinter?
Only in the forest can you see this. And this. And this. But nothing beats the moment you see that.
Cool!
That's your child's eyes opening up to a world of possibilities.
I didn't know it could do that!
Because one trip to the forest can spark a world of difference.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you And discover cool things to do when you go, like hiking, canoeing, fishing, or camping. Or create your own adventure with family and friends, and you might just see this. Your moment's out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Science Underground with your host, Anissa Ramirez.
This week, the connection between the Oscars and frogs' legs. I'm Anissa Ramirez, and this is
Science Underground.
The Oscar, a beautiful gold statue, but it isn't 100% gold. That would be way too expensive. The statue is actually made of an inexpensive metal of bronze that's coated with gold. To understand how to make gold coatings, we have to think about frogs' legs. Long ago in the 1700s in Italy, Luigi Galvani, a professor of anatomy, was dissecting frogs and noticed something strange. While dissecting a frog with a metal scalpel and a copper clamp, the dead frog twitched like it was alive. And this spooky thing happened every time he touched two different metals to the frog's spine. Galvani claimed that he found animal electricity, and many scientists believed it. However, on the other side of Italy, Alessandro Volta, a physics professor, began to think the twitching wasn't caused by animal electricity, but by the two different metals. You see, when two different metals are put together in a liquid, this sets up a chemical reaction that creates electricity. In the frog, electricity was moving from one metal to the other, causing the legs to twitch. By the way, this is how batteries work. Two different metals in a solution make electricity. So what's all this got to do with the Oscars? Good question. Well, electricity moves from one metal to the other, from A to B. But if you look under the microscope, you'll see that this is not the full picture. Metal atoms are moving too. Atoms are moving in the opposite direction, from B to A. That means one of the metals is getting coated by the other. So in making an Oscar, a bronze statue is connected to a battery and put into a chemical tank with microscopic gold in it. The gold moves towards the Oscar and coats it. And this process makes the beautiful statue that so many celebrities want. What these celebrities might not know is that their beautiful icon might not have been possible without some experiments with frogs' legs. I'm Anissa Ramirez, and this was
Science Underground.
This is the podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Said that. Welcome back. Plausibly Live, it's the Dave Bowman Show right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. I'm rather indifferent towards private sector unions. I don't necessarily think that they're a good... clearly there was a time when they were useful. I don't know that that time exists anymore, but public sector unions are a different animal. I have real concerns with the idea of people who tell me they want to serve me having that much influence over what it is that they're doing to serve me. Just something to think about. Meanwhile, there is other stuff happening out there in the big wide world. Facebook is in hot water again. Turns out they... I don't even know how to describe this. I really don't. So if you're on Facebook, you know what I'm talking about. They keep sending you these ridiculous videos that they want you to watch. We're doing something to fight fake news. We were part of the problem, and now we're going to do something about it. They don't tell you what they're going to do. And as it turns out, all that data that they collected on us, remember all that? All this data that somehow or another ended up in the hands of the Trump campaign, because that's what caused you to vote for them, right? Well, that's what we're told. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. That's what we're told, is that somehow or another, all this data that got to the Trump campaign or the Russians or whoever caused a bunch of you to vote for Donald Trump instead of Hillary Clinton. And if only that hadn't happened, if only Facebook had somehow or another not been involved with all this, Hillary Clinton would have won and everything would be fine. And the Supreme Court would not have ruled 5-4 that abortion clinics can't force people to say things and that unions can't take people's money and that immigrants could be here with no problems. The travel ban would be on. If only that had happened. This is Facebook's position. And so they keep putting out these videos. And I, for me, the better part of it is to read the comments below the video. I watched it once. This is the most absurd thing I've ever, this is the most Silicon Valley thing I've ever seen in my life. We're so sorry. But then the news comes out today that they can't find, they don't know where the data went. Well, I mean, obviously they know some of it went to Cambridge Analytica, but other than that, they don't have any idea. They don't know who the developers were that put apps on their platform that collected data. They don't, you got an app you want to put on Facebook? Go right ahead. Psh, what do we care? And now they can't find the developers. Now they can't find the people that got your data. They don't know where they went. They don't know. It's like they just took the information and vanished. It's almost like they're Nigerian princes. It's like they just got what they wanted and they lied to us about who they were. Trying to do that with a straight face and I can't. One problem is that many of the app developers that scooped up unusually large chunks of data are out of business. Some cases, developers contacted by Facebook aren't responding to requests for further information. Really? They're not? Who would have seen that coming? Who would have figured out that, hey, we'd like our data back. We'd like that data you collected back. Who are you again? I don't know who you are. Jeez. Meanwhile, California has stepped into the fray over fake news. Did you see this yesterday? This is wonderful. Senate Bill 1424 would require the California Attorney General to create the advisory committee it would need to commit an advisory committee on fake news. So the state of California is going to create an advisory committee, which they will no doubt pay with tax dollars. And this advisory committee then will monitor information posted and how it spreads on social media. I wish I could tell you that there's more to it, but that the state of California has decided they're going to pass a law, because you know this law will pass, to make the Attorney General form an advisory committee to monitor the spread of fake information, what they've decided is fake information, on social media. And then they shall be required to report upon it. God bless America. It would need to consist of at least one person from the Department of Justice, representatives from social media providers, civil liberty advocates, and First Amendment scholars. Not just citizens. We don't want those people. We want First Amendment scholars. Scholars. The advisory group would be required to study how false information is spread online and come up with a plan. This is the best part. Come up with a plan for social media platforms to fix the problem. Are you a First Amendment scholar? Well, you are a civil rights activist, right? You're a civil rights guy. Sorry, I'm talking to people in the chat room. They're going to pay for it. I'm sure it's a paid job. You might as well go apply. They are going to study this, and then they are going to come up with a plan to tell Facebook and Twitter how to fix their fake news problem. Well, why the hell do we need that? Facebook's already said they're going to solve it. Facebook has already announced they're putting videos everywhere about what they're going to do. We're going to solve this problem. We're going to make it stop. No longer shall we have trending on Facebook. Right? If you're on Facebook, over on the right, used to be this panel and it said trending. And it would tell you the stories or whatever's trending on social media. Quite frankly, I never looked at that until the day I looked at it. Well, you know, I mean, it was there on the panel, but I never clicked on anything on it. Until the day I saw that the number one trending thing on Facebook was Facebook to get rid of trending panel. I went, what? And I clicked on that. And sure enough, the number one thing on the trending panel was Facebook's going to get rid of the trending panel. And I thought, well, that's bizarre. God knows we don't want to. We don't want to let people know what we're talking about. I mean, is Talkers Magazine going to get rid of its trending section where it talks about top 10 things being talked about by talk show hosts this week? Yeah, what if some of them are fake news? What if we start an entire channel that is nothing but fake news? what would they do then? I mean, technically we already have many of them, but two that I know of specifically, the Onion and the Duffel Bag, are hysterical. And the Babylon Bee. They're nothing but entire steaming. Dave Barry is one of my favorite columnists of all times. He's one of my favorite authors. And almost every column that he used to write would contain some form of the phrase, this entire column is complete and total lies. It's completely made up. There are no actual facts in this column. And yet he would still get letters from people upset about the fact that he said Independence Day was October 8th. You can't fix stupid, folks. You can't. Look, the problem with fake news isn't the fake news. The problem with fake news is the idiots that believe it and pass it on. You want to get rid of fake news on social media? It's real simple. Don't allow sharing of anything. Tell people, no, all you can do is read what we put in front of you. Of course, your whole platform is going to go away at that point because people aren't going to be interested in it anymore. Do you think people stand around the water cooler at work and they talk about the facts about the case of the employee that got in trouble and is in the supervisor's office right now? Do you think they're talking about the facts of that case, or are they talking about what they heard? Do you know what I think? People aren't interested in real news. The people who whine the loudest about fake news on and the mainstream media being fake news are the first ones to post memes that they should know are fake. And then when you tell them they're fake, they go, oh, I didn't know that. Dude, there's no way you didn't know that. There's no way anybody who's actually thinking about anything didn't know that. And it's the same is true with fake news across the board, folks. If you're stupid enough to believe some of this stuff that's out there, then God help you. Got an argument this week with somebody over medication. For years, I've taken PPIs, proton pump inhibitors, Prilosec for normal people. I can tell you point blank, I'm only here because of these medicines, these medications. And yes, there are side effects, and yes, there are potential long-term problems, and I get that. But I'd rather deal with those long-term problems 40 years down the line than potentially die from a aspiration event, 20 years ago, which I almost did. Proton pump inhibitors, Prilosec, saved my life. And this guy's sending me this stuff going, you need to stop taking those. There's a natural way of doing this, and there's a natural way, and these medications are this. And the stuff he's telling me is complete nonsense. And then he says, well, this doctor says that. Really? Have you ever Googled that doctor, or do you just believe some guy on the internet said this doctor said this is better? Your doctor is an idiot. Your doctor, the guy you're paying money to, or your insurance company is paying money to, he's a moron. This guy that you've never met on the internet, he says he knows better. You Google this guy and you find out that he's basically a fraud con artist. I mean, he's been indicted multiple times and his websites have been shut down multiple times and he's selling stuff and the government keeps saying, you can't make those claims, dude. This has not been tested. Oh, but you go right ahead and believe him if you want. I'm going to keep taking my PPIs. I'm going to keep taking the drugs that changed my life. And by the way, I don't have heartburn or gastroesophageal reflux disease because of my lifestyle. I don't have it because I eat things that your little fake doctor tells me I shouldn't have. I have it because I have a congenital defect in my lower esophageal sphincter and it doesn't close. Never has. My earliest memories of childhood, earliest memories, 5, 6, 7 years old, are being awake in the night with just horrifying, searing heartburn. And my parents and grandparents, because they didn't know any better, handed me a glass of milk saying, here, drink this. Which, as it turns out, is probably the worst thing they could have done. And it wasn't until years later that I learned that. Anyway, if you believe what you read on the internet, if you believe what you see on Facebook, if you believe things just because someone posted it and someone said that, then, and I'm going to say this as nicely as I can, all right? I'm not trying to be mean. You're an idiot. It doesn't take that long to verify this stuff. It really doesn't. You have the entire, throughout the entire history of humanity. If this was 50 years ago, you'd have had to go to the Library of Congress and look things up tediously. Is this true? Is this true? Today, all you got to do is go to the Google and learn for yourself. Is this valid? Is this not valid? Is it true? Is it not true? Well, that's all you got to do. But people won't do it. It's like the simpler and easier we make it, the less they're willing to do it. But California is going to come up with a law, with a system to tell social media how to stop fake news from spreading. The only way this could possibly be more delicious is if this story was fake news, but it's not. You can look it up, as they say. Senate Bill 1424, Ricardo Lara. And it will come to pass, and eventually they'll pay these people a lot of money to do what? Hey, Facebook, don't do that. Okay, we won't. We don't know who we're dealing with anyway, but there you go. Advisory Committee on Fake News. Talk about a stupid nun. That's a job I'd want. Because really, all you got to do is, how often are they going to meet? Once a month, twice a month, twice a year? Sit there and listen to a three-hour presentation from some guy with PowerPoint going, and on the third iteration of the Facebook platform, we see that noticeably phony stories are increasing by a factor of 0.005% over the previously measured period of time. You'll just doodle in your book and drink coffee and eat the sandwiches that they'll have, which will be the best kind, of course. And at the end of the day, staff will make a recommendation because you're not going to actually do the work. They're going to have staff, and staff will recommend that we continue to study this issue because there don't seem to be any realistic way of dealing with it. And you'll go, okay, I'll sign off on that. And there'll be a big report in the next year, annual report from the Attorney General going, we continue to study ways of combating fake news on Facebook and Twitter. But as of yet, nobody's come up with a real way to do it other than to completely kill the platforms. And then what do you do? Because then people are going to stand around the water cooler and say things, and you'd have to kill the whole internet. There's an idea. Why don't we just do that? Why don't we just get rid of the internet? Then people will not be able to do that. Which is none of which is the story that I've been dying to get to all week. This is the kind of story that I built my whole show yesterday around it, and then, of course, it went out the window. So I constantly get on my social media feed people who are calling for term limits, right, on Congress. You see these all the time. We need the 28th Amendment to limit Congress. I saw one this morning. Term limits on Congress. Maxine Waters, she's the poster child for doing away with term limit or bringing back term limits and blah, 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 blah. And all I can say to these people is, A, we already have term limits, and B, the framers thought about this. They toyed with the idea during the Constitutional Convention. They toyed with the idea of term limits, and they eventually came to the idea that they didn't want to do it. Why? Because maybe there are people that you really want in government and in those seats, and you want them to have that experience, and you want them to be in those positions, and the people trust them, and they've earned the people's trust, and they continue to live their life as a life of service to the American people. And you wouldn't want to say to them, well, sorry, your time's up. That's why they didn't put limits on the presidency. They didn't put limits on Congress. They didn't put limits on the Senate. They understood innately, I think, that potentially there were people who realistically belonged there. Now, I'll grant you, there haven't been a lot of them through our history, but there have been some. Daniel Webster comes to mind as someone who, that's somebody that I had no objection to being in the Senate. I would have had no objection to being in Congress for as long as he was. I think of people like, more modernly, like Sam Nunn. You know, people who realistically get what they're doing. Does that make them perfect? Nope. But are we better with him than without him? But then I realized that every time this debate comes up about whether or not we should have term limits, you got a bunch of people in Congress, a bunch of people in Washington, D.C., who will do everything they can to make it seem like we should do this, like it actually is a really good idea, because these people are morons. Representative Benny Thompson, I'll let you guess the party, but he's from Mississippi, introduced a bill that would ban members of Congress from sleeping in their offices. Just let that rattle around in your head for a minute. He introduced a bill that would ban members of Congress from sleeping in their offices. No doubt to do this, we'll have to hire more civil servants to come in and bang on the doors to make sure that the Congress people aren't sleeping in their offices. Excuse me, Congressman or Congresswoman, you can't sleep here. Maybe Kissing Fish will make a movie about it. I don't know. Anyway, it would also change the tax code to allow House members to deduct their spending on housing in D.C. up to $3,000. The deduction, by the way, would not apply to senators. Thompson also has proposed turning a vacant building near Capitol Hill into apartments for House members at the expense of taxpayers. The Citizens Against Government Waste, needless to say, was not impressed. Quote, on May 16th, 2018, Representative Thompson introduced his bill, H.R. 5845, the, quote, No Couches for Congress Act, unquote. I'm not making that up. Which would ban members of Congress from sleeping in their office. He also proposed converting vacant residence halls near the Capitol into, quote, affordable housing, unquote, for members of Congress who make $174,000 per year. He, that is Thompson, claimed that this would be available for members who found housing costs to be prohibitive. However, that claim is that housing is unaffordable is belied by the average monthly cost of a studio apartment in Washington, D.C., which is about $1,600 or less than 10% of the member's annual salary. The average American spends 33% of his or her annual income on housing. There you go. By the way, the Internal Revenue Code, service code passed by Congress in 86, currently bans deductions for living expenses for members of Congress. You know how they get around that? Do you know how they get around the fact that they can't deduct their living expenses in Washington, D.C.? Many of them have hit upon a clever scheme to get around that, including two of my former congressmen. They simply bought residences in the area. Yeah, they bought houses. One of them bought a farm. One of them bought a horse racing farm. Raises racing horses while he was in Congress. And this is how they get away with it. So anyway, they've got a law now on the books. This law, by the way, had it been introduced while I was there, I would have just, you know, laughed out loud because I would have thought, well, this is a joke, right? Must be a joke. But no, it was serious, and so it's been assigned to a committee, and it's working its way through the committee system. Yeah, to be fair, they have to keep home for the family too. But the families, most of these people are running businesses, right? I mean, they're farmers, they're horse racing. I mean, they have other businesses that, and I'm pretty sure that they have plenty of deductions. Look, I'm all for building a barracks for Congress people in Washington, D.C. that I think they should have to stay in. Not get to stay in, not a barracks, a open bay barracks like we used to have in San Diego when I was there and in New London when I was there in the military. Again, this is about service, right? This is about we're serving my country. Well, if you're going to serve your country, if it's good enough for the military that you're sending into combat, why is it not good enough for you? Build barracks. Let them live in that. Make them feel like they're actually serving people as opposed to being served. You know as well as I do that that's not going to happen, is it? Yeah, probably not. Coming up next on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network, Tim Preuss is here. He's talking about the title of his show today is It's Not a Muslim Ban. I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet this morning, so I don't really know where he's going with that, but you'll want to tune into that at podcast99.org and hear what Tim has to say. In the meantime, I have to get running. Much to do today. Hopefully I can avoid the bathroom the rest of the day. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there. So don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. We'll be back tomorrow for a Constitution Thursday episode of Plausibly Love. I have no idea what we're going to talk about yet. I'd imagine we can find something over the past few days that has some relevance to the history of the Constitution. So we'll get into that. And we'll be here on Friday as well. Meantime, have a great day, everybody. And we will see you tomorrow right here at 10 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. No, Pacific Standard Time, right? Now I'm confused. We're on Standard Time. I wish we were on Daylight Savings Time, but we're not. Anyway, we'll see you tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. Have a great day, everybody. Sorry. I still want to go make a documentary. Congress people are being told they can't sleep on their couches anymore. Oh, no. God, that is so ridiculous. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Plausibly Live is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Network. To contact Dave directly, call or text area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. The email address is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. For more information or to hear past shows, go to www.plausiblylive.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.